Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is Travis Loop, the host. Across many communities here in the United States and around the world, stormwater is a very big issue. And I'm glad for this episode's guest to be joining us. It's Marcus Quigley, the CEO of Opti. Marcus, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well. It's nice to be with you, Travis.
Yeah, fantastic. We chatted before this podcast, and we could have recorded that conversation because we covered a lot of interesting ground. You made a lot of great points, so we'll try to go with that today. But I'm excited for the chat here. Stormwater is something that's a really important issue, and I'm really curious from your many years of experience, from where you sit there at Opti, what are you seeing? What are really the pressing issues with stormwater? Why is it so important for communities to manage stormwater?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We spend every day looking at this issue, but it's also one that hits communities very directly. I think with particularly over the last couple of years, there have been such significant events on the flooding side that stormwater is really front and center from people's perspective. And they have real questions about what the future holds, particularly around climate change. And they're wondering how their cities are going to hold up. I think on top of that, in addition to the quantity of water, water quality is something that is very important to people on a day-to-day basis, particularly if they interact with the waterways, if they go to their beaches, or if they're out fishing, or frankly, if they're just trying to enjoy a local park and are wondering why it now has toxic algae and they aren't able to do some of the things they used to do. So we've seen a lot of changes in the environment, and we're seeing changes as well to our communities. I think on top of this uncertainty associated with things that we feel we have less control over, we also are still building at a pretty good clip as a society, and development interacting with these changes to the environment and in our choices around development result in changes to outcomes for communities as well. So I think although we're a company and a technical community that spends a lot of time thinking about these issues and have for a very long time, there are things that people are reading pretty much every day in the paper or on the internet, on the news.
Maybe this is a strange question. Is stormwater more of a problem? Is there more stormwater to manage? Is it, you know, becoming more of a burden or causing more negative impacts on communities?
Well, I think there's probably two big things that are colliding that are changing what the impacts are. One is aging infrastructure. So many of the systems that we built were not designed for their current capacity. And cities themselves have changed dramatically. Even in recent time, it's amazing if you look at aerial photographs, even from what doesn't seem to me to be a long time ago, but 10, 15 years ago to now, and the amount of development that's happened in communities, it's pretty stunning. So we have aging infrastructure, and then on top of that, we want to build and expand. So the impacts really are changing in a significant way from both of those effects.
You know, you mentioned the water quality side of things, and CSO events, the kind of combined sewer overflow events, are a big issue. And you gave me a figure when we chatted last that kind of stunned me. I don't think I had even heard it.
Sure. So I think by and large, if you just bring up water quality to someone in a community, you think, well, we're in the U.S. We've addressed a lot of these issues. But the reality is we still discharge close to or over, depending on who you ask, about 1 trillion gallons of combined sewer overflow every year in the U.S., which is, I think, a pretty stunning number. There are, again, depending on how you count, around 770 combined sewer overflow communities in the United States. And so we're still seeing, even today, raw sewage being discharged into waterways as a primary impairment of beneficial use.
Yeah, that 1 trillion gallon figure really stunned me. You know, I'm aware that there's a number of CSO communities out there. You just said hundreds and hundreds of them. But I think when you hear and think about a trillion gallons of kind of untreated sewage or of overflows, that's incredible. And that's having an impact in local waterways and is a threat to public health and something that we need to collectively address for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to jump, actually, because it fits good here, to ask you about what you think about the public's understanding of all of this, of the stormwater issue. Do you think the public understands that it's a kind of a growing issue spurred by development and climate change and aging infrastructure? Do you think they understand it's a problem that it needs to be managed? What are your experiences with that?
Yeah, I really think there's a lot of disparity depending on where you are in the country and how closely you are connected to the impacts in your community from stormwater. It's also been shown that a lot of the terminology we're even using in having this discussion right now is foreign to people. You know, simple concepts like watershed, if you do surveys, are not kind of well understood. And so we really, in communities in particular, I think need to start very simple and relate it to things that are important when we have these discussions. I always think, you know, the Clean Water Act was named really well at the very highest level. You know, this is how we regulate water quality in this country. But that kind of simple message, clean water, really resonates with people. And we know more and more that it's really not the case that we should even be separating the ideas of drinking water quality and receiving water quality and wastewater into different compartments, that all these things are highly connected. And I think that simplifying the message and talking more about health and how this relates back to, you know, people's kind of basic visceral understanding of what it means to have clean water. And they primarily think of what do I drink as kind of the driver is a good way to go. And to some extent, you know, the nuance of receiving water quality and storm events and flooding just needs to be simplified from a political message.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Clean Water Act, that was named very well. Safe Drinking Water Act, good choice there too. So, and I'll just, you know, give a shout out. Clean Water Act just passed its 46th anniversary. I think October 18th, I believe. So, good sure. Stuff. And I know we also talked about how that public awareness, you know, communities where they're a little bit more connected to water, if it's a coastal community or if the livelihood is connected to fisheries or things like that, help sure. Public awareness. It's usually a little bit higher in those places.
Yeah, I think that's right. That, you know, if you're in the Chesapeake Bay, water quality is something that literally it impacts tourism. It impacts, you know, your ability to recreate on a day-to-day basis. We just saw with some of the large storm events, pretty significant impacts to Maryland around water quality and even destruction of property from flood flows coming down the Susquehanna. If you're out in a place like Portland, Oregon, or in Washington State, you know, near Seattle, things like salmon runs are really important, and they're a part of the community as well. So it really depends greatly how kind of connected you are based on the cultural perspective. And I do think too, you know, I've been at this about a little over 20 years. I do think that perspectives have changed. There's certainly many more people that understand these issues than at the beginning of my career. And I think that's a really positive trend, maybe for some negative reasons. I mean, we see the increase in uncertainty around water availability, around water quality, and particularly around, you know, large storm events, extreme events, and flooding. But this has brought awareness forward, and that has been helpful.
Yeah. Playing off of this, one area that's really important is getting public officials, especially, you know, local decision makers, to understand the impacts of stormwater, understand the benefits of managing stormwater, realize that you need to make some investments in those areas. So what do you think are kind of the keys in getting local decision makers to support stormwater management, stormwater investment?
Well, I think you know, communities that are doing this really well are seeing significant dividends. So particularly when you've got a, you know, you've got a community that is fairly engaged with their water resources, innovating in particular around solving these problems, doing things like bringing in green infrastructure, intelligent technologies, is an effective way to engage in with the community, you know, in general. These are things that particularly some of the solutions are high value in other ways, not just solving kind of these base civil engineering and water quality and quantity problems, but also increasing property values, greening our communities, making them more walkable and livable. These things are all very connected together. So the communities that are getting, and the politicians for that matter, that are getting this right, are really finding it as a way to connect. And technology has a role in this too. It's you know, primarily what I'm focused on every day, but the ability to be transparent about how money is being spent and a return on those investments back to the community and what the outcomes look like. There are lots of new opportunities to do this that can involve kind of direct observation. Facts are really important to people these days to demonstrate, you know, how governments are responsive. And the more that we can surface real concrete information in an unfiltered way and provide that directly to constituencies can be very valuable.
I love your point about how a lot of the tools and techniques for managing stormwater, including green infrastructure, have kind of this multiple benefits. They've got a win-win-win kind of effect for the environment, the economy, you know, the community, many, many different ways.
That's right.
And I guess a side point, when I lived in Maryland, the opponents to a stormwater management fee dubbed it a rain tax. And that's pretty catchy. And that was a tough thing to try to overcome from a messaging standpoint. But yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there have been even some of the places in the country that, you know, you might think might be opposed to these types of fees have done quite well in addressing particularly flooding problems. I mean, it's not a new thing out west to have flood control districts. In Florida, water management districts have been around for a very long time. And particularly they were a necessity. You know, if you look at, I don't know, Urban Drainage and Flood Control District in Denver or Southwest Florida Water Management District, these are not controversial issues. I think, you know, it really depends on how connected the impacts are to people about, you know, how they consider those types of kind of fees. But it is probably really showing outcomes in the end. I mean, what people want, I think what we all want from government is money to be spent on things that are productive and that result in you know, positive outcomes for communities and things that really only government can step in to solve. And at these scales, at watershed scales, you know, local governments, state governments, and the federal government have important roles to play.
Well, let's shift gears to kind of that, how stormwater is managed, can be managed, what's happening out there. We're well aware we're in this incredible age of technology, the digital era, and kind of align with your expertise here. Want to hear a bit about how technology is improving our capabilities to manage stormwater. What's going on right now?
Yeah, we talked a minute ago about transparency. So one of the more interesting things that's happening is that we're able to deploy now, as a technical community, sensors that can observe directly what's going on in real time, surfacing that information in ways that is actionable and that is meaningful at a highly local level, but also at larger scales like the watershed scale. So, you know, transparency and visibility and analysis are really happening in very new ways. And it's really a result of the same things that we've been seeing change across our lives relative to information technology. The year we started working on real-time monitoring and control solutions was the same year the iPhone came out. And we really know it was 2007, which seems like a long time ago now, but it wasn't that long ago. But you think about how dramatically different pretty much every single part of our lives have changed since then. Those same technologies, cloud computing, ubiquitous wireless communications, low-cost, reliable, robust hardware, is changing the way that we can understand and manage stormwater and flooding and water quality as well.
That was just right. That's just a little over 10 years ago. But it seemed that was like a totally different era prior to, you know, the iPhone and everything that came along with it. So so it's the same kind of leap that's happened in technology in the water sector and the way all this kind of comes together, huh?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it certainly, you know, public infrastructure normally lags to some degree from an innovation perspective, and that's for very good reasons. We need to make sure that systems are trusted and that they're reliable over the long term. And so adoption has been slower than it has been on the consumer side, because we're all very comfortable with buying a new app or a piece of hardware and don't have an expectation that we need to solve a 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 year long problem with them. So I think it's been reasonable to assume that things haven't moved as quickly. But the thing that is exciting is we're really learning that ideas like the Internet of Things, these technologies being embedded into infrastructure, aren't just about kind of solving consumer problems. They're about solving these really big societal and community issues as well. Mm. So we're really starting to see that. And we've got some great case studies. Just to talk about one in particular,
sure.
During Hurricane Irma in Florida, we had some of these technologies deployed on a series of lakes during the hurricane. And the ability to observe in real time what was happening, and maybe more importantly, the ability to control storage in a lake system before a hurricane shows up in a flood-prone area, you know, begins to tell the story of where we're headed. And so in Ormond Beach during Hurricane Irma, the ability to know what was going to happen with the forecast and integrate that into the control of some of their flood control systems really changed the outcomes dramatically and reduced flooding impact. So smart applications aren't just about getting consumer goods to your home more efficiently. They're about these really big problems.
Could you talk to me a little bit more about, you know, how a community might use technology, use some of this stuff you're talking about? What would be kind of like an ideal setup for managing stormwater? What type of, you know, technology would they put in place? What kind of systems, you know, digital systems and so forth would they have? They'll be like, hey, this is kind of cutting edge here. This is going to the best we can do.
Yeah. One of the most interesting things about these technologies that particularly to communities, that's important is they're able to optimize the things we've already built. So we have massive amounts of existing stormwater infrastructure that operates, and it was state of the art. There's nothing wrong with how it was designed from a civil engineering perspective, but it operates suboptimally given these new technologies. So, you know, the ideal places where they can have the most impact is where you already have significant storage infrastructure, either for water quality or for flood control. And you would be surprised, there's over a million wet pond facilities in the United States that have been built mostly in the last 30 to 40 years that are sitting out there with, you know, these are multi-hundred billion dollar assets that we have constructed over time. And they, with some of these new technologies, they have a new lease on life. They are able to provide significant additional flood control capacity and water quality performance without building just new major capital investments, which is kind of how we've always thought about what's the way to solve problems in civil engineering and urban planning and design, is that there must be something new we need to build. And with the advent of new optimization technologies, we're able to say, let's change the baseline instead of just building new things and wring every little last bit of benefit out of what we already have before we start building new things.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. You know, you kind of mentioned how the water sector, you know, has historically been a little slower to adapt to put in new technology, so forth, because it's, you know, it's got an important mission with public health. And so how much is it really happening now that utilities are adopting kind of these technology solutions or advancements for stormwater?
Yeah, it's happening pretty quickly. And it's not just on the stormwater side. I think it's happening across drinking water and distribution systems and in plants as well, you know, wastewater treatment plants, water treatment plants. The cost savings from these types of approaches are so significant. I mean, we typically see over new capital assets that cost reductions to get the same types of outcomes or better outcomes are from 50 to 90% less expensive on the optimization side. And the uptake is actually, I think, at a pretty good clip. These are very large problems, but the uptake has really been growing, particularly in the last 2 to 3 years, at a really geometric rate. And I think you see kind of innovation play out like this in many conservative markets, is that there's this kind of leading edge of pilot projects and early adopters stepping up to the plate. But we are really starting to see the early majority applying these techniques as they're demonstrated across all kinds of geographies and climate regions. Just to give you an idea on the continuous monitoring and adaptive control side of things for stormwater, just our efforts, we're out in 21 different states and have over 130 deployments. And these are, you know, major cities with, at this point, relatively small numbers of applications, but the that's changing pretty rapidly.
I guess last question I have is kind of looking forward, and there's been a lot of weird weather lately, I think, around the country. Incredible storms, the frequency, duration of precipitation, and, you know, climate change is, I think, kicking in and behind a lot of this. So you're going to have these rain events, you're going to have hurricanes, you're going to have all this stuff. How do we design our stormwater systems, or what do we do with stormwater with an eye toward this future and climate change?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I've been on plenty of standards committees and written guidance on how to design stormwater facilities appropriately. And mostly historically, those projects have been and efforts have been about trying to figure out what's going to happen in the future. And a lot of the effort that goes into the debate around climate change, what the impacts are, how do we build, is focused in that way, trying to figure out what's going to happen. But there also are some other ways to look at these problems. We can inherently design for uncertainty in those assumptions, and particularly where we're able to embed some of these new technologies, we can change the design on a very frequent basis into response to the performance of systems. Hmm. So in stormwater, for example, we have, we always run models. We do a planning study. We run models. We put designs together based on that modeling, and then something gets built. And historically, we almost always walk away and, go on to build something else and work on something else. And everything's fixed in time about what the design standard was. With some of these new adaptive control technologies, we certainly still have to decide how big to build things, what type of base infrastructure we want to construct, but we don't necessarily have to determine exactly how it's going to work, and we don't necessarily need to know the future. So we're able to, we still do modeling, we still do design, we still build things, but after that point, there is this ongoing process of data flowing back from constructed systems, analysis and interpretation of that data, either manually or long-term in an automated way, and then redesign and redeploy as a matter of changing literally software on how these systems operate. And I think, big picture, it's where we're headed across the board. When Tesla deploys cars, they can upgrade them by literally sending out software. Our civil engineering is headed in that direction. You don't necessarily have to know what the future holds in order to design well for an uncertain future.
Oh, that's, I love that example. That's very cool. And, going back to how we talked about 2007 and the iPhone and the incredible leap in the past 10 years or so, it'll be amazing to see where we are in 2028 with all of this.
It's really incredible. I fully expect whether I'm involved, whether our company is involved, an open question. But one thing that I am very confident of when you get really close to where things are headed is that it's an amazing time of opportunity. And we're very optimistic about our ability to address some of these issues and do it in a way that we can afford to do.
Yeah. Well, if we haven't caught up formally before then, we'll definitely do another podcast in 2028 and check in on how things have changed.
That's a deal, Travis. That sounds good.
All right, Marcus, thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Take care.
Words on water.